Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Lemon Snail Podcast with me, Gary Jones. Now how are you all doing this week? Now I have got a brilliant show lined up for you today with the one, the only, the gentleman that is Alan Atherton from ASA Fire Safety. Now I've known Alan for a couple of years now and in this podcast we delve into his passions, how he got into fire safety, some top tips on how you can avoid ending up in court and actually making sure your site is safe, and also so much more. So I really hope you enjoy this podcast. I really love talking to Alan and you're going to be able to hear more of him later on. So let's get cracking with part one of this brilliant podcast. Hey. So I am with Alan Atherton from ASA Fire Safety and we're going to be talking about a whole manner of different things. But first of all, Alan, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Gary. Nice for you to ask me to come along today.
No, it's cool. I've been knowing you for a couple of years. And I want listeners to know a little bit more about the guy that I know. Is that right?
Yeah, great stuff.
Sweet. So let's start with just a bit about your background and history. So tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, what is ASA Fire Safety?
Well, basically, it's daft as it may seem, it's a fire safety company, and I thought of the name quite easily because it's just my initials.
Fair enough.
And it was on top of the list of the companies they could use the name of. I thought, yes, that will do. But basically, I'm a fire safety company, and what I do, I look after workplaces, HMOs, rental properties, and just make sure that the fire safety they have in that place is correct, as it should be, to a particular governmental standard.
Brilliant.
And make life easier for the people who are working or living in those places.
Nice. And have you always been in the fire kind of industry?
No, I mean, I started off in what you'd call the work services of a cable manufacturer in Merseyside. I worked in the electrical stroke mechanical department, just basically glorified tea maker. And then I learnt from there, working with electricians and draftsmen in the office, and led me into electrical wholesaling, which I was in for 10 years.
Okay.
Working for a manager electrical sort of wholesalers in the country. And from there I just picked up lots and lots of different knowledge, but particularly picked up on the fire alarm emergency lighting side, which I thought was fascinating at the time.
Yeah.
Which led me to join a fire alarm manufacturer.
Oh, okay. And how long ago was
that? Was about 1987.
Okay.
And basically, I would go out and specify fire alarms, emergency lighting systems for hotels, office blocks, corner shops, university. Did a lot of university work. And I did that for a number of years. It was about 2003, and then I moved to extinguisher manufacturer. Again, same thing. And that's how I learned about how to, where to put an extinguisher.
Yeah.
What type you need to use to do fire risk assessments, fire training, the whole sort of fire safety gambit, basically.
Got it.
I've been doing that now about 30 years.
Oh, wow. So for the people who, you know, have got a qualification, just come out of university, got a qualification, you've been living and breathing it for that amount of time.
Yes.
I bet you've seen some different changes in that time. That must be
Technological wise, yeah, a lot of advancements. A lot of advancements on technology and the way things are done.
So can you give me an example of how the technology has changed?
Yeah, because you're talking about when I first went to the fire alarm, it was just what would they call a two-wire system, and basically you'd have to run cables around the building and you'd have two separate sounder circuits and a separate zone circuit, and then they'd have to wire in a certain way. Now you've got your analog addressable, where basically you can sort of just run one big loop around the building and every detector, every call point, every part of the system has its own little address, and if something happens it'll flag up on the panel telling you exactly where that place is on fire. Same with emergency lighting, LED now, it's a lot smaller, compact.
Yeah,
it's developed an awful lot.
Yeah.
And lot more central monitoring of them for these type of things as well.
Got it, which I'm guessing will make it more safer and much more easier to maintain.
To keep
well.
A track of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, cool. Has the actual kind of equipment changed much? So the extinguisher part of it? So that's what most people see when they think,
yeah, they've developed into much that they're more efficient than they used to be.
Okay.
The maybe a small extinguisher will cover a larger area than it used to, because they develop them so that the sort of they'll make them into what they call a hydro spray or a mist that's found to be more effective than just squirting water out of a standard extinguisher.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's been a lot of changes on that.
Oh, nice. So during that time, there's been loads of changes in the industry. I'm guessing you've were in Merseyside when you started doing this about years ago.
Yeah, indeed.
Just because of that's where your electrical part was. So
No, I was based in Merseyside. Lived in St Helens, but covered all the way up to sort of Cumbria, Lancashire, Manchester, North Wales, across to Yorkshire.
Nice.
Or wherever they needed me.
Fair enough. And we're now in Lemons and Spa. We are.
Yeah.
At the moment doing this interview. So what kind of made you come down here? Was it...
Well, it's the same old thing. It's sort of, you get to a stage where... with a lot of the bigger fire safety companies, if things aren't going well, the first thing they do is say, let's retain the engineers, but we'll get rid of the salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was obviously on the sales side because I will go out and find new business. So, here we go, another redundancy. What do we do? And daft as it may seem, we were living in Merseyside and we were sitting there twiddling my thumbs thinking, what do we do? And my oldest daughter rang and said, are you going to be grandparents? I thought, whoa. And they happened to live in Leamington Spa along with my other daughter.
Ah.
And that was the key to saying, right, stuff it. I've talked about this for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Time to do it. So we basically sold our house and we moved to this part of the world.
Nice.
And I started the business... I would say we're coming up to middle of next month, will be 3 years ago, with knowing nobody and just starting from scratch and build it up to where we are today. So
we must have known each other at the start of that journey or about that, because it's got to be 2 years at least.
Yeah, I'd say so, because we arrived here about mid-September 2014. Settled in, didn't really do much until maybe the early part of 2015, I think.
Yeah. So I started doing all this around this August, September time. Yeah.
So so you're talking sort of, it's actually 3 years, I think, on about the 14th or 15th of September, my third
year in business. A couple of weeks' time then.
Yeah.
That's
and basically started from scratch.
Nice.
Not knowing a body, didn't know my way around the area or anything.
Yeah.
I just know we're away from where we were living in Bedworth to get to my daughter's in Leamington.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
So what kind of areas are you covering at the moment?
Well, basically a tying stick between 15, 60 miles radius of this area.
Okay.
But if certain jobs come up and, you know, they're worth the travelling, I will go further afield, but I tend to stick around the West Midlands area, if possible.
So West Midlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, fair play. Fair play. Well, we're going to stop it there for part one. Then when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about the industry, some top tips, common stuff people get wrong, maybe you can fix straight away. Does that sound all right?
It does indeed.
Cool.
You.
If you did want to get on the podcast, all you need to do is contact me through Twitter, search me at Leamington Hour, all one word, and then you'll be able to find us, connect with us. You can check me on LinkedIn and Facebook as well as Gary Jones. But mainly, let me know about your story. Let me know about your business or event, and we'll get it sorted. But I would love to have you on the show, and I would love to hear, promote, and connect you with other business owners and help you promote your business or service. Let's carry on with part two of this brilliant interview with me and Alan. We're back now for part two with me and Alan Atherton from ASA Fire Safety. Welcome back, Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Yep.
So we've been talking in the break about loads of different stuff, but one thing that's kind of come shining through for me is you're doing it for a really good reason. Your why is really powerful.
Yes.
And I think that stems from a big misconception in the industry.
It is, yeah, because I must admit, particularly more so when I worked for a lot of the big manufacturers of extinguishers and the way that the fact that they put a lot of time and money into their engineers, but only paying their engineers quite a small salary.
Mm.
So they have to go out and sell and sell and sell to make a decent salary. And a lot of the people would say to me, I've got a lot of extinguishers here, I don't need, why have I got to change so many every year? And a lot of the time, unfortunately, I would have to say it's maybe down to the fact that the engineer needs to make some money.
Wow. Okay.
And there was the old saying that you go into a place and find out, you know, you could have extinguishers hanging off backs of chairs because the engineers made a couple of quid out of it. So that's something.
And the extinguishers were hanging at the back of chairs.
Yeah, no, that's an old joke.
Ah, okay.
Idea that you'd go in and say, you can tell the engineers you're spinning and done a service. There's extinguishers hanging off backs of chairs and everything.
Oh, got you.
He made quite a lot of money out of it. So that's something that's always bugged me a bit, because as far as I'm concerned, is if you go in, you survey a place, you look at the risk, and you just give the amount of extinguishers or whatever's needed to cover that risk, and that is it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I would like to work. And for instance, if you have a service, you might get an engineer coming up to you and saying, you need three changing. And normally say, oh, okay, sign here.
Yeah.
But my thought is always say to them, you should ask the engineer, why do they need changing?
Okay.
Because going to the British standards, you should be given a reason why those extinguishers need to be changed. Is it the fact that it's got the lining's coming away from the inside? It's got a faulty, hose, it's split. There's quite a few other reasons, and I just tend to find that if I do it, the service will be done. If there's any to be replaced, I would talk to you about it before that's done and then get your permission to do it. So it's just my little bugbear. It's always have been for a number of years.
Yeah.
So that's why I decided when I did it, it wouldn't be like that.
No, that makes sense. I get that. And I think that's credible as well. And it shows your character, which is brilliant. One thing that I've completely forgot to mention in part one is that you mentioned a story to me ages ago about the Tate in Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
And you know where this is going. But I'd just love the listeners to kind of hear the story, if that's all right.
Yeah, no problem.
It's a cracking little tale. I love it.
Yeah. Well, basically, we used to look after the Tate in Liverpool. We had a phone call from my boss saying, can he contact one of the curators who's got something he needs some help with? So I rang him. He said, come in. He said, can you come and do this, have a look at this situation we've got for us, yeah? So he took me into the actual one of the rooms, and I think it was the time, it was the Turner Prize, it was one of the runners up at the Turner Prize, it was doing the tour of the country.
Okay.
And the big platform at the end of the room was a big, round, huge bale of hay.
Okay.
So I just looked at him, I said, what do you want? He said, well, Merseyside Fire Brigade have told us that we have to somehow make sure this doesn't burst into flames. You've got to make it fireproof. Oh, right, okay. Because we don't want people to come along and try and set fire to it with cigarette lighters, you know, thinking it's funny. So I thought, I'm going to do this. So I said, leave it with me. I'll come back to it at a later date. So I went away.
Yeah.
And I went through sort of all the stuff that's available to me, and I found a spray that you can spray on fabrics and various other things that will fire retard it. So I went off to a pet shop and bought some bedding, animal bedding. Took it to the yard, sprayed it with this stuff, and just sat there with a cigarette lighter trying to light it. And lo and behold, it retarded, so we had to go back. Same sort of thing again, under my arm, all my animal bedding. We went to the yard of the Tate with the fire brigade there and the sky, and we did the same thing again. And the fire brigade said, yes, and we're happy with that. You can use that. So lo and behold, we supplied them with the spray, and they just coated it. And that's how you fireproof a bale of hay, basically.
Brilliant. And how big was this bale of hay?
Well, have you ever seen the ones in the field, the really big round ones?
Sort of,
4 or 5 foot diameter. It was quite tall.
Yeah.
And it was basically an art exhibition. That's what it was, a bale of hay.
Wow.
But yeah, it's strange. Strange. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever been asked to do.
Yeah.
What? I never heard it bursting into flames, and as far as I'm aware, it's mostly sitting somewhere in some museum, perhaps, or art gallery.
There you go. I just love it. Thank you for sharing that.
That's right.
So, in terms of your kind of industry, there must be loads of stuff that people think they do right, but they don't actually do right, or they only do probably 70% of the job, just because of whatever it could be, timing, staffing, knowledge, whatever it is.
Yeah, very true.
Can you give kind of some examples of
this? Well, I think one of the main things, and it's become more apparent recently, is fire risk assessments. The fact the law changed in 2005. Previously, the fire brigade would come in and tell you what you needed to do to make your workplace safe from fire.
Mm.
But in 2005, they brought in the what they call the Regulatory Reform Order, or the Fire Safety Order, which puts the emphasis on the business owner. So they now have to do a fire risk assessment to say, yes, my workplace is safe from fire.
Yeah.
And the fire brigade now enforce that. They don't get involved in giving you tips on what you need to do.
And is that for every...
That's for everybody. So basically, you're talking about anybody... The only people it doesn't tend to apply to is if you have a serviced office, and it's including the package extinguishers and everything. But if you have rent one little office and it's you and somebody else, yes, you are responsible to do a fire risk assessment for that office, which doesn't necessarily have to be written down, but if you don't write it down, you're daft.
Yeah.
And basically, you have to say, I believe this is safe. There's two ways to do it. You can actually do it yourself and hope for the best, or you can get somebody in to do it who will basically go through the whole thing, put a package together, put a document together and say, this is what you need to do. But not forgetting, doesn't stop there. There are other things you need to do as well.
Okay.
And it's a constant ongoing of checking various things and logging them. So,
You did mention about you would write it down or you wouldn't write it down if you're daft. You know, do you find that people don't write things down, and what could be the implications if they don't?
Well, it's very unlikely that you wouldn't write down what your fire safety is, but some people don't, because they may think, oh, that's okay, I've done that, it's all right, leave it. But then if somebody comes, a fire brigade come up and say to me, can I just see your documentation? You haven't written it down. You're going to think, what did I do last time? What did I do when I did it? So that's why it's always well to document it, because they will physically ask to see it.
Yeah.
That see your document that says...
So that's for any checks you do, any risk assessments you do,
yeah.
For instance, any testing that you do as well.
Yeah, for instance, part of the fire safety order is if you have a fire alarm, you have to test it once a week.
Yeah.
By rotation at 10 testing call points. If you have a emergency lighting, you have to do a function test. Ideally, you should check all your escape routes are kept clear.
Yep.
What's your fire policy, your emergency plan? Is it written down? So all these things. So if you're doing those type of tests, log them in a logbook.
Yeah.
If it's on PC or, you know, make your own file up. Because when they do come, they will have to see that as well.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was about you can buy fire logbooks from Staples and those kind of bits.
Yeah, if you're ever stuck and you can't get one, give me a shout, because I'm quite happily surprising for you.
Yeah.
They don't cost a lot of money, but it will also tell you in there what checks you need to do.
Which is probably the most important bit.
Yeah. And how often you need to do them.
Yeah. I know you work in different retail environments in the past. It was always drilled down to us that you've got to do it. And it's not even for the sake of doing it, it's to making sure that it's being done. So that one time, anything happens, you know it's safe.
Yeah, for instance, if you hadn't tested your fire alarm that week, and you've left it a couple of weeks, and fun enough, then you come to use it, you click, and it doesn't work, and you think, that might have showed up if you'd tested it. Right? So it's there for a reason. It's not because... Yeah. Somebody's decided, it's a good idea to get people do something they don't, you know.
Exactly. It's not exactly a paper reason.
Because you can confirm that it will be working, it's working when you've done the test week by week. And also, it's useful for them if it flags up any faults on your fire panel, you can write them down also and report them and say, well, I've asked an engineer to come to cover that fault. So, that's the reason behind it, to be honest.
That's fair enough. So, what is next for Alan Atherton and ASA Fire Safety?
Well, I'm trying to put something together that's going to be a little bit different, but maybe based in the Coventry area, maybe get some, like a little workshop that will be helpful to business owners. But not just for fire safety, but for any other things that may be interested to them, they need to know about. That hopefully I can get other people to join me and basically give some knowledge out to people.
Cool. Because you've done workshops in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done fire training. Yeah, that's been quite good. And a couple of other things on basically the basics of fire safety order and what you need to do. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a similar thing, but it's been put together. So hopefully later in the year we'll see how that comes off.
And when it is released, will that be released on social media and new website?
Yes, it will be when it does come together. It'll be on social media, Twitter, Facebook. It'll also be on the website and wherever. Basically, it'll get some coverage so people will know what's happening and hopefully they'll come along.
Brilliant. Now, at the end of every interview, we always ask our guests what their one golden nugget will be. So this is their one bit of golden advice that, you know, if you're going to tell everybody just one thing, what would yours be?
Well, I know for certain that when I started a business, you don't know till you do it that all the stuff you have to do. And as far as I'm concerned, if you don't know how to do it and you're unsure, get somebody who knows what to do it, which is things like could be accounts, social media. Don't struggle on yourself.
No.
You can work a lot of time, get somebody in, sort it out and get them to do it properly, because I've found trying to do it myself didn't work and wasted a lot of time until I got wise and decided to give it to other people who knew what they were doing.
That's it.
So I would say, yeah, that's one of the main things I would say.
I love it. Thank you very much, because it's so, so true.
It is very
so true. So if people wanted to find more information about you on social media and websites, how could they?
Okay, well, my website is www.asafiresafety.co.uk.
Nice.
If you want me on Twitter, it's at AlanOtherton4. And basically, you can find me on LinkedIn and also on Facebook.
Brilliant. Well, cheers for the updates on fire safety, Alan.
And my pleasure, Kerry.
Take it easy. Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Alan, for that brilliant interview. And I really hope all the listeners enjoyed hearing your tales and learn how to fireproof a bed of hay. When I heard that story a couple of years ago, I wanted to let everyone know, and this is my chance. So remember, follow him on social media, check out his website if you want to find out any more information. Now, the Lemon Snail podcast is going to be released every Thursday, and it's available on iTunes, Audioboom, and other platforms. So if you can subscribe to any of those channels, brilliant. It'll be downloaded straight to you. If not, check it out on our website as well, which is lemonsnail.co.uk. Have fun, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Take care.